CIB. From Australian police records come these true stories of day and night vigilance that protects our lives and our properties, of prevention and detection in the unceasing war against crime. CIB. From New South Wales, the true story of the Million Pound Alibi. This is a true story from Australian police records. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. This is the story of a crime and a type of criminal, fortunately rare in Australia. And it is a story which illustrates a truth about human nature which experienced crime investigators come to understand very well. Qualities which are admirable in some people, the qualities, for instance, of affection and loyalty to the members of one's own family, can in other people be so distorted that they provide the motive for cruel and ruthless crimes. The drama of the Million Pound Alibi opens in a deserted side street in the city of Sydney some considerable time ago. The time is 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, Sergeant, nothing doing up there.
Might as well get back to the car.
Yes, might as well. My gosh, I won't be sorry to get back and sign off tonight, Dick. I swear I'm coming down with a dose of flu. Hey.
What?
You see what I see?
What? Where?
Over there, over the street. The entrance to the arcade.
Oh. I didn't see him when we came down to check up 5 minutes ago.
No, neither did I.
Getting a bundle, too. Quite a big bundle.
Wait.
Let him go for a bit, see what he makes for.
He's moving now.
Quick. When he gets out onto Castle Ray Street, you see if he can spot anything wrong with those doors in the arcade. I'll keep him in sight. It's too late. There's a car coming. A taxi by the look of it. He's whistled him in. Come on,
we'll tell them.
Okay, Jim, get her going.
Okay. A green van taxi, did you spot him?
Sure thing, I saw him.
The light of the crossing, see him?
Don't worry, my eyes are all right.
Okay, then stay about 50 yards behind him.
The driver isn't in a hurry. What do you think, Sergeant?
Yes, you're right. He isn't in any hurry, but... No, I think we'll take a look. Look, never mind about tailing him. Get alongside him, Jim. We'll see what happens.
Roger.
Good.
Pull him in.
Righto.
Driver, police here.
Okay, he's stopping.
Ah, sorry to hold you, driver. Just a check. We'd like a word with your fare.
Oh, that's all right by me. I don't know him from a bar of soap. What is it that you want?
We're police. It's just a check.
Police? Police Betway.
They've told you. Just a check. Mind giving us your name and address?
What is all this, please?
Name and address, please.
Andreev. Nicholas Andreev.
And where do you live?
In Mossman, 12 Cover Crescent.
I see. Now, do you mind telling us what you have in that bundle?
Bundle?
Yes, the bundle. Or parcel, if you prefer.
That is my business.
Come now, Mr. Andreev. Be reasonable. We're police. It might very well be our business, too, now, mightn't it?
I do not see it.
Well, now, after all, you come out of an arcade at 3 o'clock in the morning carrying a big bundle. That's the sort of thing you'd expect police to check up on, isn't it?
I do not see it.
I'm sorry about that, but I'm afraid we'll have to check whether you like it or not. Now, what's in the parcel?
Clothing. Some furs.
Your property?
Of course. You think I am a thief?
All right, Dick, you better take a look.
Yes, sir.
Where did this property of yours come from, Mr. Andrews?
From my brother's shop, of course.
Where's your brother's shop?
In Garand's Arcade. He is a hairdresser, my brother. He is very well known.
Is that so? And his name is?
Misha Andreev. Everybody knows Misha Andreev.
Indeed? Now tell us this, if you don't mind. Why do you happen to be taking a large parcel of clothing and furs from your brother's shop at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I take them because I have his permission. Is it police business when I take my property from my brother's shop?
Sir?
Yes.
Clothing and furs, all right.
New stuff by the look of it.
I see. Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Andrew, but I'm afraid you'll have to come back with us to headquarters until we have time to check your story.
You have no right to do this. I protest. I will sue you. You will be dismissed.
Come on, Mr. Andrew, be sensible. Don't talk nonsense. And don't do anything silly. We're going to headquarters. And now. Well?
Looks like you were right, Sergeant.
You mean Mr. Andreev hasn't got a brother?
No, he's got a brother, all right. The name's Nicholas. But he says there were no clothing and furs in his shop. And he certainly didn't give anybody permission to be in at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh-huh. And is he coming in?
Yes, said he'd call a taxi and come in right away.
Oh, I suppose we'd better take our client back then and wait. Identification and that sort of thing.
Yes, I guess so.
Well, come on.
Right. Is he still playing indignant?
Yes, very indignant. Very temperamental customers, Mr. Andrew.
But the average detective is not greatly impressed with temperament. After a few months' routine inquiry work, he gets used to it. So Mr. Andrew found himself again in a police car with the two men from the CIB, bound for Garand's Arcade, where it had been arranged that the proprietor of the establishment known as Andreev, gentleman's hairdresser, would meet them.
When my brother tells you that I have his permission to take these things, you will look a fool.
I'm sorry, Mr. Andreev, but we must check up on these things.
Hello? Fire engine. I wonder where this spot of bother is, Sergeant.
I don't know. You see any glare, Jim?
No, not yet.
It looks as if the boys are serious about it this morning.
Here comes another. Big engines, too.
Yeah, sounds as if they've got out half the brigades in town. I'd better pull over, hadn't I, Sergeant?
Yes, I suppose you'd better. No. Second thought, Jim. Step on it. Those fire engines have given me a hunch. We'd better get along to Garand's Arcade as fast as we can. Let's go.
Sergeant.
Yeah.
This is Mr. Misha Andreev.
Oh, yes.
Sergeant Scott, CIB, Mr. Andreev.
Yes, but this is dreadful. This is terrible. My shop, everything will be burned. I must go to see.
Take it easy, Mr. Andreev. You can't get into that arcade now. Half the place is alive.
But my shop, my fittings, my stock.
I'm sorry, but you can't do anything. The firemen in there have got their hands full without having to keep an eye on anxious owners. Well, they're doing their best.
I'll say they're doing their best. That fire gets away any more, the whole block will go.
Now come on, Mr. Andrew. We've got a chap in the car who claims he's your brother.
But he is my brother.
Yes.
Yes, I have seen him. It is Nicholas. There is some mistake.
I see. Well, perhaps we'd better
get a look. Sergeant, do you mind? We're running another hose through here.
Right, we'll clear out. Is there anything we can do?
Just keep the sticky beaks out, that's all. We've got the very devil of a job on our hands with this one. Old darn Warren ought to have been pulled down years ago.
Come along, Mr. Andrew. It'll be a long time before this sorts itself out. We better get back to headquarters and talk this thing over. It's no good, Andrew. Those women's dresses and the furs have been definitely identified. They belong to Markovich Mode's proprietary, the premises where the fire started. You'd better tell us how they came into your possession.
I tell you, I get them from my brother's shop.
Your brother knows absolutely nothing about them. Furthermore, he's told us that neither you nor anyone else had any right to be in his shop at 3 o'clock in the morning.
My brother did not understand.
Your brother didn't own the goods you had in that bundle, Andreev.
Do you suggest he stole them, then?
No, no, my brother did not steal.
Very well, then. How did you come by them? If you took them from his shop, believing they were his, then he must have stolen them, hasn't he?
No. No, Misha is not a thief. It is not true. I am the one.
I see.
I was drunk. I did not know what I was doing. I must have...
Go on.
I stole the things from Markovitch.
And then?
I tied them in the bundle and called the taxi and you caught me.
And the fire, Andrea?
The fire. But I had nothing to do with the fire. I swear it.
It started in Markovitch within minutes of you leaving. That fire was burning when you took the taxi.
No, it is not true. I did not start it.
Then who started it? Was someone with you? Your brother, perhaps?
No. No one was with me. I smoke. I smoke many cigarettes when I am drunk. I must have dropped an end on the floor. There was paper.
I see. You must have dropped a lighted cigarette end in the paper, Andrew. Well, you've one thing to be thankful for. The brigade stopped that fire before it really got away. A few minutes more and your accidental cigarette butts would have cost human lives. £1 million in damage. Think that one over.
Nicholas Andreev signed a statement admitting the theft of the goods from Markovitch Modes, but he persisted in his strenuous denial that he had deliberately set the shop on fire to cover the theft. However, the city coroner committed him for trial on 4 charges of arson arising from the destruction of the Markovitch premises and serious damage to 3 other shops in the arcade. The police believed that he was guilty of breaking, entering, and stealing. But they realized that as the fire itself had destroyed all evidence, and as Andreev was alone, it would be difficult to prove that he had deliberately started the blaze. Then, on the very morning that the man's trial started at the quarter sessions, a shopkeeper in Garan's arcade made a very strange discovery.
Hey, young Bob. Come here a minute, will you?
Yes, Bentley. Coming.
What is it? Have you been in this stock cupboard?
Why, no, Mr. Bentley. Why?
Well, come here.
Yeah, but I... Gee, whiz. What's that?
I'm darned if I know. It looks as if somebody's been boring holes in the floor with a brace and biffle.
Gee, it does, doesn't it? Bits of shavings and stuff all over the place.
And what's this stuff?
Well, I don't know. Looks like cellophane or something.
Not cellophane. Strips of plastic or something. Celluloid.
But, gee, why would anybody want to bore holes in a stock cupboard, Mr. Bentley? It's silly.
I wonder. Look, Bob, I don't like this very much. You pop over to Mr. Nicholson, the caretaker, and ask him would he mind stepping over here for a minute. If he hasn't got an explanation, I have a mind to call the police.
Mr. Nicholson, the caretaker, had no explanation. He studied the bit holes in the floor of the shop fitting carefully, examined the shavings and the strips of material that looked like celluloid, and agreed with the shopkeeper that, although no possible motive could be ascribed to the strange damage, the police had better be called.
It's got me absolutely beaten, Sergeant. Just these half dozen holes. Nothing more.
Hmm. What do you make of it, Dick?
I don't know. One thing's certain, though, they've been bored from underneath.
Yes, but why? It doesn't look as if anybody were trying to break in by that means. Surely they'd have used a saw.
Well, there's one way to find out. There must be a basement under these shops. Right, Mr. Nicholson?
That's right, Sergeant. There is.
And how do you get in? From this shop?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, it's a long while since I... Oh, yes, I remember. There's an entrance from the shop just over the way. I've got the key here on my ring.
And who occupies the shop now?
As a matter of fact, it's vacant for the moment. There was a chap going to move in, but what with all the cleaning up after the fire and so on, well, he's been a bit delayed. The place is just opposite Andreev's. You know, the hairdresser chap whose kid brother broke into Markovitch's.
Well, now, that's interesting. Very interesting indeed. Let's go over and see what we can manage to turn up.
there are, Sergeant.
Thanks, Mr. Nicholson. Is there a light in here, or do we have to use the torches?
Half a minute. Sorry, looks as if the globes have packed up. Nobody's been in here for years, maybe.
No, that's all right. The torches will do for a start. You lead the way, Mr. Nicholson.
Sure. Mind your step. It's steep.
Bit of a rummy business, Sergeant.
A bit. Now, who on earth had... No, well, never mind. We'll find out in time.
All right. Come down.
Coming.
It's certainly dark down here. Yeah. See anything yet, Sergeant?
Can't see my hand in front of my face. Use that torch, man.
Oh, fine.
That's better. Righto, Mr. Nicholson, you know what part will be under the Bentley shop, do you?
Well, roughly, anyway. This way. Over here, Sergeant. Mind your head. Those beams are pretty low.
I'm right.
Grizzly sort of hole for a man who doesn't care for spiders, isn't it?
I'm not far now. A couple of steps here.
Thanks. Where are?
Now, I wouldn't absolutely swear to it, but... Yes. Now, this is the section that should be directly beneath Bentley's shop.
Shine that torch around a bit, Dick.
Yeah, sure. What's that over there?
Where? Oh, I see. Wait, no, don't touch it, Mr. Nicholson.
Oh, sorry. What is it, Sergeant?
Cardboard. Rolled and fastened into a cylinder, by the look of it.
And a piece of candle.
Yes. No dust on them, either. They haven't been here long.
Look. Here's the place. Wood boring.
Wait, don't move.
What's the...
Almost under your feet. Don't tramp on the man.
But what on earth are they?
Torch, please, Dick.
Here.
I don't know, but I'm willing to take odds they're ping-pong balls.
Ping-pong balls? Why, that's absurd. What on earth would three ping-pong balls be doing here?
Have a look. Neat job, isn't it? Each ball sewn across the top. There's some sticky, colorless stuff in them. Liquid.
Smell anything?
No. Better leave them. Now, Mr. Nicholson.
Yes?
We're going to have to search this basement very thoroughly. Have you got a plan of the building anywhere?
Why, yes, I reckon so. Somewhere in my office.
Good. Well, we'll go back now and get those plans and emit a light. I want to examine the floorboards of every shop in this arcade. There's been something rummy going on here. Something very rummy indeed.
Square inch by square inch, the detectives examined the basement floor and the underside of the floorboards of every shop in the row served by that dark, disused basement. They made some remarkable and puzzling discoveries.
Got your photograph, Ken?
Sure. Want any more, Sergeant? No, that ought to do it.
Want to take it down now?
Yes. Careful of fingerprints.
Okay. That's got it. Well, what do you make of it, Sergeant?
A cardboard cylinder with a length of candle stuck to the bottom. Ping-pong balls filled with sticky fluid on little shelves inside the cylinder. Brown, sandy-looking stuff on the bottom of the cylinder. And the whole contraption tacked by cardboard straps to the underside of the floorboards.
And don't forget the strips of celluloid plugged in the holes drilled through the boards.
No.
Well, what do you make of it?
I don't make anything of it. At least not yet. This is a job for the boys at the Scientific Bureau, and we're going to get them here. Quick.
Straight. The first cylinder and candle in the Bentley shop, plus three ping-pong balls. Six ping-pong balls and another length of candle under the sweet shop next door, and the cylinder tacked in place under Misha Andreev's shop. All three shop floors with holes bored in them, right?
Right.
Now, how do the scientific boys say it works?
It's simple. The gentleman who invented this gadget has quite a mind. Quite a mind. The cylinder is tacked in place. He lights the candle through the hole provided in the side of the cylinder and clears off.
And then what happens?
Well, the candle burns down at the rate of about an inch an hour. Finally, it reaches the ping-pong balls. They're celluloid, and they burst into flames, spilling their contents.
And the contents?
Glycerine. Ordinary glycerine.
That's not particularly inflammable?
No. But when the glycerine hits the Condley's crystal heap around the butt of the candle, then things start to happen. There's a chemical reaction, a violent burst of flame.
The celluloid strips plugged into the floorboards catch fire, and bingo, the whole floor's on fire in a matter of minutes.
Exactly.
What a devilish idea.
You can say that again. By the time the fire has started, the firebug is miles away, with an alibi that's brass-bound and cast iron.
Sergeant?
Yes?
What's the next move?
I think we'll go along the Garin's arcade and wait for Mr. Monsieur Andrieff to come to business.
Monsieur? But it was under his shop that the firebug set up the incendiary gadget.
I know. Dick?
Yeah?
What's your impression of Monsieur?
How do you mean?
He seems pretty worried about Nicholas being involved in those arson charges, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Now, those two brothers are pretty close together. I've got a hunch this second fire, the one that didn't come off thanks to Bentley discovering the holes in the floor, has got a close connection with Nicholas being tried for arson. A very close connection indeed.
The two detectives intercepted Misha Andreev later that morning on his way to the shop. They told him briefly what had been discovered and that they wished to examine his premises for further evidence. That further evidence was certainly forthcoming.
Well, Mr. Andreev, I'm afraid it looks a little awkward to you, doesn't it?
I tell you, I know nothing. Nothing at all.
Then how do you account for the strips of green celluloid found under the pile of papers in your back room? Celluloid that exactly matches the strips stuffed into the holes in the floorboard.
I know nothing, nothing.
What about the scattering of the Condley's crystals and the length of candle we discovered?
And the eyelet punch, with the little bits of cardboard in it that match the holes in the cardboard cylinders.
And the glycerine bottles in the waste paper basket.
It is a lie, you are framing me. The punch is mine, but nothing else.
What about the tacks we found? The tacks that match the ones used to fasten the cylinder to the boards.
Is it? Texts are mine, but nothing else, nothing. You frame me.
Don't be absurd, Andre. What would we want to frame you for? We believe you fixed up that gadget to start a fire today so as to influence your brother's trial. Now, didn't you?
I did not. Never.
You were going to light the candle and then go off somewhere and establish an alibi, weren't you? You believed that if another fire broke out in the arcade, a fire deliberately caused, your brother would benefit because suspicion would be directed elsewhere. That's the truth, isn't it?
Lies. All lies.
I think not, Andreev. We'll leave it. But I'll tell you something you don't know.
What will you tell me?
You could have saved yourself the trouble. The word has just come in that the jury has acquitted your brother on the arson charges. I think there's some doubt about the fire being started deliberately. Your brother has got the benefit of that doubt. Your brother's been lucky, Monsieur Andreev.
My brother is innocent. I am innocent.
You'll have to tell that to the jury. You'll have to tell them you didn't deliberately plan a fire that could have gutted a whole city block and cost scores of lives just to save your brother from jail.
They have set Nicholas free?
No, my friend, they have not. He's been found guilty of breaking and entering. Now, it's up to you to see if you can convince the court that our evidence leaves a reasonable doubt about your intent to commit a crime when you made those cylinders. I don't think you will, Andreev. And that is why we're bringing charges.
The man from the CIB was right. The evidence against Misha Andreev was overwhelming. Charged under a provision of the law that had probably never previously been invoked in the state, the offense of making a device with intent to commit arson, the elder Andreev was found guilty and served more than twice as long in prison as the brother he had sought so callously and recklessly to protect. Only names, place names and dates were altered in this story. It was dramatized from Australian police records by Edward Dawkin. And now this is Carl Bleasby saying goodbye until next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, which is produced in the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.